the human race has not progressed very far in the past 2,000 years in terms of its spiritual evolution. We've heard teacher after teacher, master after master, lesson after lesson, and we're still exhibiting the same behaviors that have produced misery for our species since the beginning of time. We're still killing our own kind, running our world on power and greed, sexually repressing our society, mistreating and maleducating our children, ignoring suffering, and indeed creating it. It has been 2,000 years since the birth of Christ, 2,500 since the time of the Buddha, and more since we first heard the words of Confucius or the wisdom of the Tao. And we still haven't gotten the main questions figured out. Will there ever be a way to turn the answers we have already received into something workable, something that can function in our day-to-day lives? I think there is. And I feel pretty certain about it, because I've discussed it a lot in my conversations with God. The question I most frequently asked is, how do you know you've really been talking to God? How do you know it's not your imagination, or worse yet, the devil trying to trick you? The second most asked question, why you? Why did God pick you? And the third, what's life like since all this happened? How have things changed? You'd think that the most frequently asked questions would have to do with God's words, with the extraordinary insights and the breathtaking revelations and the challenging constructs of our dialogue. And there have been many of those inquiries, to be sure, but the most frequently asked questions have had to do with the human side of this story. In the end, what we all want to know about is each other. We have an insatiable curiosity about our fellow human beings, more than just about anything else in the world. It's as if we somehow know that if we can learn more about one another, we can learn more about ourselves. And the yearning to know more about ourselves, about who we really are, is the deepest yearning of all. And so we ask more questions about each other's experiences than about each other's understandings. What was that like for you? How do you know that's true? What are you thinking right now? Why do you do those things? How come you feel that way? We're constantly trying to get into each other's skin. There's an internal guidance system that directs us intuitively and compellingly toward each other. I believe that there's a natural mechanism at the level of our genetic code, which contains universal intelligence. This intelligence informs our most basic responses as sentient beings. It takes eternal wisdom to the cellular level, creating what some have called the law of attraction. You see, I believe we're attracted to each other inherently out of a deep knowing that in each other we will find ourselves. We may not be aware of this consciously. We may not articulate this specifically, but I think we understand this cellularly. And I believe that this microcosmic understanding derives from a macrocosmic one. I believe we know at the highest level that we are all one. It is this supreme awareness that pulls us toward each other. And it is the ignoring of it that creates the deepest loneliness of the human heart and every misery of the human condition. This is what my conversation with God has shown me, that every sadness of the human heart, every indignity of the human condition, every tragedy of the human experience can be attributed to one human decision, the decision to withdraw from each other, the decision to ignore our supreme awareness, the decision to call the natural attraction that we have for each other bad, and our oneness a fiction. In this, we have denied our true selves. And it is from this self-denial that all our negativity has sprung. All of our rage, all of our disappointment, all of our bitterness has found its birth in the death of our greatest joy, the joy of being one. And the conflict of the human encounter is that even as we seek at the cellular level to experience our oneness, we insist at the mental level on denying it. Thus, our thoughts about life and how it is are out of alignment with our deepest inner knowing. In essence, we are acting every day against our instincts. And this has led to our present madness, in which we persist in acting out the insanity of separateness, all the while yearning to know the joy of oneness once again. Can the conflict ever be resolved? Yes. And it will, when we resolve our conflict with God. And that's the reason for this book. This is a book I had no idea I was going to write. Like Conversations with God, it was given to me to share. I thought that when the CWG trilogy was finished, so too would my career be as an author by accident. Then I sat down to write the acknowledgments page for the guidebook to book one, and I had what felt to me like, well, like a mystical experience. I'm telling you what happened then so that you can better understand why this book is being written now. When they heard that I was writing this book, some people said to me, "I thought there was only supposed to be a trilogy." It was as if producing more material somehow violated the integrity of the original process. So I want you to know how this book happened, how it became clear to me that I had to write it, even though now, as I sit here, I have no idea where it's going or what it has to say. It was spring 1997, and I had completed work on the guidebook. I was nervously awaiting reaction from my publisher, Hampton Roads. Finally, the call came. "Hey, Neil, great book," Bob Friedman said. "You mean it? You're not kidding?" There's always a part of me that can't believe the best and is expecting to hear the worst, so I was ready for him to say, "Sorry, can't accept this. You'll have to do a complete rewrite." "Of course I mean it," Bob chuckled. "Why would I lie to you about a thing like that? You think I want to publish a bad book?" "Well, I just thought you might be trying to make me feel good." "Trust me, Neil, I'm not going to try to make you feel good by telling you you've got a great book if what you've got is a stinker." "Okay," I said warily. Bob chuckled again. "Man, you authors are the most insecure people I know. You can't even believe someone whose livelihood depends on telling you the truth. I'm telling you, it's a great book. It's going to help a lot of people." I let out my breath. Okay, I believe you. "There's only one thing." I knew it. "What's wrong?" "Nothing's wrong. You just didn't send any acknowledgments." "We just wanted to know whether you had any acknowledgments, or just forgot that page, and if you want to run without any. That's all." "That's all?" "That's all." "Thank God." Bob laughed. "Are those your acknowledgments?" "They might as well be." I told Bob I'd email him something right away. And when I hung up, I let out a yelp. "What's that about?" my wife Nancy called from the next room. I marched in triumphantly. "Bob says the book is great." "Oh, good," she beamed. "Do you think he really means it?" Nancy rolled her eyes and smiled. "I'm sure Bob's not going to lie to you about that." "That's just what he said. There's one thing, though."
"What?"
"I've got to go write the acknowledgments."
"Well, that's no problem. You can knock something out in 15 minutes.
Obviously, my wife had been a publisher. So I sat down on a Saturday morning and began my task by asking myself, whom do I want to acknowledge in the front of this guidebook? Immediately, my mind said, "Well, God, of course." "Yes," I argued with myself, "but I thank God for everything, not just this book." "Then do it," my mind argued back. So I picked up a pen and wrote, "For the entirety of my life and anything good or decent or creative or wonderful I may have done with it, I thank my dearest friend and closest companion, God." I remember surprising myself with the way I put that. I'd never described God in quite that way, and I became consciously aware that this is exactly the way I felt. Sometimes it's only as I'm writing that I begin to know exactly how I feel. Ever had that experience? There I was writing this, and I was suddenly realizing, you know, I do have a friendship with God. That's just how it feels. And my mind said, "So write that down. Go ahead and say that." I began the second paragraph of the acknowledgments. "I've never known such a wonderful friendship. That's exactly what it feels like going here. And I never want to miss an opportunity to acknowledge it." Then I wrote something without having any idea why. "Someday I hope to explain to everyone in minute detail just how to develop such a friendship and how to use it. For God wants, most of all, to be used. And that's what we want as well. We want a friendship with God, one that's functional and useful." At precisely that point, my hand froze. A chill went up my back. I felt a major rush inside my body. I sat quietly for a moment, stunned into a complete awareness of something that a moment before I had no thought of, but which now seemed perfectly obvious.
That particular experience was not new. I've had it often while writing conversations with God. A few words, a few sentences would fly out of my mind, and when I saw them on paper in front of me, I would suddenly be clear that this is what is so. Even though a few minutes beforehand, I had no idea about this. The experience was usually followed by some kind of physical sensation, a sudden tingling, or what I would call a happy trembling, or sometimes tears of joy, and, on occasion, all three. This time, it was all three. The triple whammy. So I knew that what I had written was absolute truth. Then I experienced an important personal revelation. And this, too, has happened before. The feeling is one of abruptly being aware of something in its totality. You know it all at once. What I was caused to know, and that's the only way I can describe it, is that I was not going to be finished with my writing at the end of the trilogy. It was suddenly clear that there were going to be at least two more books. And then a knowingness about these books and what they would have to say swept over me. I heard God's voice whisper,
"Neil, your relationship with me is no different from your relationship with each other. You begin your interactions with each other with a conversation. If that goes well, you form a friendship. And if that goes well,
you experience a sense of oneness, communion, with the other person. It's exactly the same with me. First, we have a conversation. Each of you experiences your conversations with God in your own way, and in different ways at different times. It will always be a two-way conversation, such as the one we're having right now. It could be a conversation in your head, or on paper, or with my responses taking just a little more time and reaching you in the form of the next song that you hear, or the next movie you see, or the next lecture you attend, or the next magazine article you read, or in the chance utterance of a friend whom you just happen to run into on the street.
Once you have become clear that we are always in conversation, then we can move into friendship. Ultimately, we will experience communion.
You are therefore to write two more books, Friendship with God and Communion with God. The first will deal with how to take the principles shared in your conversation with God and turn your new relationship into a fully functioning friendship. The second will reveal how to elevate that friendship into the experience of communion and what will happen when you do. It will provide a blueprint for every seeker of truth and will contain a breathtaking message for all humankind.
You and I are one right now. You simply don't know it. You do not choose to experience it any more than you know or choose to experience your oneness with each other.
Your books, Neil, will end that division for all those who read them. They will destroy the illusion of separation.
This is your assignment. This is your work. You are to destroy the illusion of separation.
This was always the mission. It was never anything less. Your conversations with God were always and only the beginning.
I was stunned. Another chill went up my back. I began to feel an inner tremble, the kind that no one can detect, but that you feel in every cell of your body. And that's what's happening, of course. Every cell of your body is vibrating at a faster rate, oscillating at a higher frequency, dancing with the energy of God.
That's a very good way of putting it. That's a wonderful metaphor.
Whoa, hold it. I didn't know you were going to be showing up so soon. I was just relating what you said before in 1997.
I know I couldn't help it. I was going to wait until somewhere in the middle of the book, but you started writing very poetically, and I couldn't stay away.
Nice, that's nice.
Well, it's almost automatic, really. Whenever you write lyrically, speak poetically, smile lovingly, sing a song, or dance a dance, I have to show up.
You do?
Let me put it this way. I'm always there in your life. Always. But you become much more conscious of my presence when you do these things. When you smile or love or sing or dance or write from your heart. This is the highest version of who I am. And when you are expressing these qualities, you are expressing me. I mean that literally. You are expressing me. That is, pushing me out. You are taking me from the inside of you where I always reside, and showing me on the outside of you. And so I seem to be just showing up. The truth is, I'm always there. And you are only in these moments aware of me.